since 2020, things have changed, and I think we need to think about solutions. You need to be solutions driven, because with the cost of living, financial uncertainty, with the chaos that's happening, with the different conflicts in the world, we now need to think about how fashion can be solutions based and solutions driven.
Welcome to Careers in Fashion.
Hello everyone, I'm Amelia Cross, a careers consultant within the Graduate Futures Department at London College of Fashion, and my job as a consultant is to help students and graduates realise their goals and prepare for entering the fashion workplace. In this episode, I'm delighted to introduce to you our two expert speakers today, BA Fashion Design and Development alumna Angela Baidu and BA Fashion Management alumna Giovanna Vieira. Angela has a wealth of experience spanning over a decade of working with and influencing the decision making of both creatives and leaders within the fashion industry. From product development to trend forecasting, Angela has worked for mass market brands including Burberry, Debenhams and WGSN, and now works as a freelance fashion forecaster and senior strategist. Joining Angela is Giovanna, whose career includes a variety of impressive roles, including event assistant at Burberry, brand specialist at Selfridges, and head of marketing at Rotaro. She's also an entrepreneur, founding her consultancy business, The Fashion Blueprint, which now specialises in creative strategy and community building. So I'm proud to welcome our guests. Hello both, how are you?
Hello. Hi. Thank you for the introduction.
Wonderful. So today's topic is navigating the fashion jobs market. Both Angela and Giovanna understand firsthand how challenging the creative jobs market can be and will share their personal experiences of successfully forging careers in fashion. So let's get started. I'd like to take us back to the beginning and learn more about how you secured your first role after graduating. This is often the hardest step in the career ladder, and lots of graduates will be wanting to know how you got your foot through the door. So Angela, if we start with you, what was your journey of securing the first creative role after graduating?
Thank you, Amelia. So when I graduated, it took a little bit of time, which again is normal, I think, for a lot of students. And during my time at LCF, I was actually working at retail, River Island, to kind of supplement my income. And once I graduated, I was actually there for about 6 months. I was obviously like applying so many roles and going to interview after interview and obviously wondering, you know, when is it going to happen? But I was really lucky in terms of I was made aware of a program that LCF puts on, which is like an exchange program with American Eagle, which is, you know, is a brand which is now on our shores. It's now in Westfield at the moment and lots of other high streets. I was really encouraged to apply for it, and I was like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. And, you know, when I was told it was in New York for 6 months, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, absolutely. This sounds like something I absolutely want to do. And I got super excited and did everything that I thought, you know, I should do. Got my portfolio ready, you know, went for the interview and sadly I didn't get it. But I was super determined to, you know, keep going, because it was a great experience to actually meet with the team. And I realized it was something that I think was running every year. And I think I gave it a couple of months, maybe 6 months. And I was like, you know, I'm going to try again. And I tried again. And obviously having been through the experience before, I was like, I actually know what they're going to ask. And I actually know what I'm looking for this time, because I asked for feedback from the first interview and I secured the internship with American Eagle and I got to go to New York for 6 months. And that was just, it was absolutely amazing. I learned so much, got to be in an amazing city, you know, got to work with a renowned kind of brand in their sort of product development department, got to work really closely with the director of product development. And I really got my hands, you know, dirty, so to speak. I got involved in, you know, everything, whether it was fittings or speaking to factories and also, you know, working with the trims and the fabric team. And yeah, from there, I was actually able to, when I came back, I had such a wealth of experience that I saw a job going at Burberry, which was for a product development assistant. And I think in the beginning of my career, I'd always wanted to be a fashion designer. And that's the only thing that I ever wanted to be. But I thought to myself, do you know what? Actually, Burberry is an amazing luxury name in the industry. And I feel like this is what is going to open doors for me in the future. And it actually did. So again, no job has to be forever. So I thought to myself, actually, I've got the skills for this. This is exactly what I was doing when I was in New York. And there's a high probability that I'll be able to get the role. And I applied. And I think because because I did into American Eagle, I actually got the role, and that kind of got my career going to where I am today.
Amazing. I think that's a fantastic learning to see. You had an obstacle, you didn't get the internship initially, but getting that feedback really prepared you the second time around. So I think that's wonderful. Excellent. And how about you, Giovanna? How did you begin to navigate the jobs market after you graduated?
Yeah, so my journey started whilst I was at university. So my career was always in the back of my mind whilst I was studying. And fashion management is quite a broad course. For me, the reason why I chose that course was because it would enable me to kind of like explore different options. I wasn't really sure if I definitely wanted to go into buying, which is what I initially thought I wanted to do when I started the course. But then because I had the opportunity to work as an events assistant at Burberry, interning for them during that time, supporting with all of their fashion shows, I knew I didn't actually want to go down the direct event management route. Then I did a placement year in buying at River Island, actually, for a year. And I was given so much responsibility. I was given such good visibility of what the full range planning process actually is. And I realized that I actually most definitely did not want to do buying after I graduated. So during that time, in my final year, I started working at Selfridges, actually as a sales associate. I utilized that to then get me my first role after university. So by the time I graduated, I was promoted to brand specialist at Selfridges. And it was just mainly through one, knowing what I wanted to do or what the options were for me, and then kind of like leveraging something that I had already secured whilst I was at university to get me to the next level, because it's really, really hard to secure a role even at a junior level that is so competitive. So I just wanted to try and then get my foot through the door as quickly as possible to expose myself to what the industry was actually like, just because from my experience whilst I was at university, it was from trying that I realized that actually I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. So I continued to put myself out there, and then I stayed in Selfridges for I believe 2 years before I then joined LV as CRM, so client development, clienteling. For me to even get to the realization of what CRM was, or to even know where that was, I had to be in retail, I had to find out about it in that way, then learn that there's so many different ways to approach it, from a clienteling and client development point of view to then more of a tech side of CRM and database management. So that was kind of like my journey in those initial years.
Incredible and amazing how it feels like once you've got that initial foot through the door, the opportunities really open up. So yeah, once you've got Selfridges on your CV, Louis Vuitton is right around the corner, and same with you with Burberry. Angela, I think that's amazing. So let's get back to the present. As careers consultants, I've definitely seen a huge change in the jobs market and a lot of new trends post-pandemic, including the normalization of working from home, also an increase in online networking versus in-person networking events. Thinking about the current market, how do you now go about searching for roles and applying for jobs online? So Giovanna, what do you do in terms of your job search strategy?
So now I work freelance, so online is my best friend, LinkedIn is my best friend, or also previous connections that I made in the industry. But initially, I remember that sometimes the roles I would find online were not really where I found success. I imagine because there's just so much competition, they receive so many CVs, and it was just more about thinking, how can I stand out? What can I do? And it was really hard. I remember it being really, really difficult to actually secure a job when I was ready to move on. Even from LV, it was still hard to find a company that I could just kind of like apply for a role and just get the role. It wasn't that simple. To be fair, when I did move on from LV to Ghani, it was through an online application, but I remember seeing the role advertised maybe just through a Google search, but I then went on their website and applied directly just to cut out the middleman and cut out the different sources of recruitment for them, and made sure to write a cover letter, which I know is really annoying. Most people don't like to do that, but I made sure to write a cover letter, and then I was invited for an interview in that way. But like now, for example, it's just really through connections and people that I know kind of like letting me know that there's an opportunity here or remembering me. But it took a while to get to this stage. So when I was kind of like getting a little bit more established, it was still about applying online and just keeping an eye out for opportunities, manually going on different brands' websites to see if there were any opportunities, and not just searching on search engines, like actually thinking, okay, what roles am I looking for? What companies could potentially have these roles? And have a list and literally constantly go and search. So it could be a bit long sometimes, but looking for a job is a job. It's really quite time consuming. So there's, I would say, to really, and nowadays it's better because we can leverage technology, we can look online. You know, when I first wanted to get into fashion, I'll probably have to send emails, find an email, and then actually ask if there's any opportunities. They weren't as widely advertised online as they are now. So I think it's more competitive, yes, but in many ways it's also easier to just apply.
No, fantastic advice. I think exactly what you said, finding a job can sometimes be a full-time job. Yeah. It's very overwhelming. How about you, Angela? Do you have similar experiences in searching for jobs and opportunities?
Yes, I definitely do. I think the first thing that you need to think about when you are job searching is, are you going down, and it can be both, but are you going to go down the freelance route or are you going to go down the full-time route? So I was, you know, a staunch full-time girl where, you know, I like to have my money coming in at the end of every month, knew what my, you know, paycheck was going to be. But kind of moving into freelance, it kind of changes your mindset. So when you're freelance, you want to think about having, for example, one or two regular contracts that you do. So that's normally what I do. I have, you know, two or three people who I work with on a regular basis, whether it's doing trend reports or whether it's doing articles, because I also freelance as a fashion editor. Those are my kind of bread and butter. So I know that, you know, as a freelancer, I'm always kind of seeking new opportunities with different publications or with different kind of trend agencies to bolster, you know, my salary. And then the Vajjia Devana was saying, it is also a case of looking online for different opportunities. There are always people who are looking for strategists, or there are always people who are looking for forecasters, and there are always opportunities, especially like things like LinkedIn. But then I think there's brands like, for example, Run the Check, who are on Instagram, and they always put up new positions which are happening. So, you know, it could be like the V&A, where they're looking for a junior curator, and I think they're always putting up positions which are paid, and also, you know, internship, there are opportunities there. But then again, if you're looking for something full-time, I understand that is a lot harder, but you should also be thinking about expanding where it is you're also looking and what it is you're looking at, because things like AI, things like technology are going to be the next sort of big thing to hit. Things like sustainability are going to be really important. So adding that kind of string to your bow as well, just thinking about pivoting where you are. So if, you know, you're a fashion designer, maybe think about adding the element of sustainability. Maybe work for a company whose remit is, you know, looking at sustainability, because obviously that's, you know, as I said, that's now going to be coming into legislation. So a lot of brands are going to have to be thinking about it. So I definitely feel that looking online is a key tool. But then there is also, you know, like Giovanna was saying, the idea of networking, because it's been really interesting how I've been to events, connected with different people, made sure to follow up, go for coffees with them, because there was somebody who I actually met at Fashion Week in February last year, and then at the end of 2023 I actually reached out to a lot of people about pitching an article for Ghana, where I've just been, and just seeing who was interested in me kind of covering the different cultural events which were happening there. And the funniest thing was that girl who I met at Fashion Week, she came back to me and was like, oh my gosh, remember we met at that kind of brunch that we had that morning, and you know, we'd really love to commission you. And it was because I had developed that relationship that she remembered me, and that it could have just been a straight no, we're not interested in, you know, your pitch, but because she remembered me, and because, you know, we'd built that kind of rapport, she was like, oh my gosh, yeah, you know, you seem really, you know, cool, and you know, I would really love to work with you. So that's where we talk about networking being really key and being able to lead to different positions. So for me, there are kind of different paths to you finding work. But again, you need to think about whether you want to do something freelance or whether you want to do something full time, and then just kind of get your head into which space you want to go into.
Yeah, I think you touched on two things that really resonated with me and my experience. So one was making sure your CV stands out and you add in things that the market would, yes, be looking for. So exactly. Right now, AI, sustainability, and interest in fashion tech, but also things that are genuine and maybe are unique to only you and your experience and only you can bring to the table.
Yeah.
And you touched on something else, networking and building those relationships. And it's funny because sometimes it's not in the most kind of like corporate of environments that you meet people that can be career defining thing for you, because they can really introduce you to opportunities or speak about you in rooms that you're not even present in.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden you have this amazing opportunity and a paid opportunity, yes, which we need more of in fashion.
Exactly.
That can really kind of like catapult you to the next level of your career. So that really resonated with me and my experience as well. Yeah.
And I think, like you said about going onto company websites, I think you should probably have, and this is one thing which, you know, I've always spoken about, is absolutely, yes, the Burberry's, the Louis Vuitton's of the world, the Gucci's of the world, absolutely, those are amazing brands. But you also have to think about, there are so many different brands who are operating at the contemporary luxury level, where, you know, you've got Ganni, you've got 16 Arlington, you've got the Attico, you've got, you know, brands like Fear of God, you know, you've got Supreme, you've got so many brands who are out there, you've got millions of brands who are out there who are just operating at a different level, who you could actually be applying to, who you could probably more likely secure a role with, who you could get stuck in and have a lot more experience. You could probably, you know, end up being, you know, working with the director at some of these brands because they have smaller teams. So having those kind of names on your CV are just as important as having the Louis Vuittons and the Gucci's. So I always kind of reiterate to whoever I'm speaking to, whoever comes to me for advice, that have a look at all those brands and go on all those brands' website, and you'll be amazed at the number of roles that you will actually find within their careers sections of their website. So my thing is just to expand your thinking when it comes to who you can apply to.
That's an amazing segue to my next question, because you mentioned both of you have worked for some of the most desirable brands in the business. We've talked about Burberry, Selfridges, Louis Vuitton. We as consultants hear so much from students that they're always aiming high. They want to work for LVMH or Kering. What I'd love to know is, what advice do you have for approaching that sector? And also, is it really worth it? Is luxury all what it's backed up to be? Angela, what do you think?
I definitely think it is. I think that, but again, as I said before, because when you look at, for example, Paris Fashion Week, you absolutely have those major brands who are anchoring Paris Fashion Week, but then you are also having all the emerging names, or all the names who have been going for 10, 20 years, who are also just as key within the fashion calendar, because they often bring a lot of directional design. They often bring the creativity that maybe some of the bigger brands, you know, when they have to think about their bottom line, have had to, you know, pull back on. So I think that those emerging names are, you know, just as key as the bigger names. But I think when you work for a luxury brand, I think what you just need to be aware of is the fact when you come in within your role. So I was a product development assistant, and you're doing your role, and that's going to be, it's not a bad thing, but you're doing your role, and that's what you're going to be doing, unless you apply for a different role, and then you obviously, you know, will be working in that role. But when you work in the luxury industry, it's a lot of hard work, a lot of late nights. It's a lot of baptism by fire. It's, you know, I think I learned hard and I learned fast, but I was quite organized, so I was able to, you know, take the knocks, and with every kind of feedback that I had, with every session that I had with my manager, whether it was good or bad, or, you know, whenever you have any meeting, please go in with a pen and paper, because if your manager tells you to do something, or says you need to work on something, or says we need to do this, that and the other, it's the worst thing when you have to go back and be like, oh, what was it again that you said? So I think that, you know, working in the luxury industry has taught me how to dot my I's and cross my T's. But again, like I was saying, there are so many different opportunities at brands who operate outside of that space, who can actually give you the same sort of experience, and again, who look just as good on your CV. So I would say that absolutely the luxury level of the industry is worth it. It really does give you a grounding in how to be organized, how to work with different factories, different suppliers, how to do things at a really high level. But again, working for brands maybe at a contemporary luxury level, or even like a mass market level, you will end up doing a little bit more, and you can actually bring your ideas to the table and say, well, oh, this process might be a bit better for, you know, the way that we work, and how about we try it this way? And your manager might be like, sure, you run with it. And that opportunity might be more likely to happen when you're not at necessarily a luxury level.
Amazing. How about you, Giovanna? Obviously working for a luxury department store and Louis Vuitton, potentially the biggest luxury standalone brand. What was your experience?
I would say there are different ways to look at it. So your question was, is it worth it? And I think it really depends on what you want to achieve out of a role. So for me, it was more than just about the name. I wanted to specialize in something. So initially, I was thinking, what do I want to be kind of like a specialist within? And initially, it was luxury, which to me, coming to LCF is something that I loved. And it's the vision and the dream that's kind of like sold to you. So you study legacy, households within fashion and the big names, and you study the fashion history from a very kind of like Western perspective. So you think of the biggest luxury brands in the world, and that's kind of like what you want to pursue because that's the dream that was sold to you. But I think from my experience, where I initially wanted to specialize within luxury, and I was primarily within the more kind of like consumer facing role, so from sales to then communications and then marketing, it then became more than just about the brand, and it became more about what I'm actually putting out there into the world. So initially I wanted to specialize in something within a company, and I put it in this way mostly. I say you can either have like a smaller role within a big company, or you can have a big role within a smaller company. And initially I didn't mind having that smaller role within really big companies because I wanted to specialize and I wanted to understand the inner workings of a fashion company. And I think what luxury taught me was standards, and it was frameworks and the inner workings of the industry, how this whole machine is engineered. But then once I learned that, it was more about, okay, what impact am I having from a bigger perspective? I felt like I also matured and came into my own self. So the two go hand in hand. As you discover yourself, you're also progressing in your career. And I just was like, actually, I don't agree with this. And luxury still operates like fast fashion. I had had that experience, River Island, within buying, which was very trend-led. What's happening? What's the latest style? And they look at runway shows to then kind of like recreate some of those styles. But then I also had the luxury experience, which dictates a bit more than it follows. Now it's kind of all intertwined, to be honest. But I would say initially luxury mostly dictated fashion trends. Then it came to a point where I was like, actually, there are so many different collections a year, and the quality when it comes to ready to wear isn't always as high as you would think or expect from these big luxury name. So I ended up then changing my mind and wanting to specialize more within the sustainable side of the fashion industry. It became really, really important for me to contribute more towards the growth of that side of the industry, whether it was from more of a research perspective or working for more sustainable fashion brands. And that's when I then joined Ghani, for example, which was an amazing experience for me in understanding how a brand can still be appealing to the consumer and still build a community whilst also caring about the environment and working conditions and actually caring, actually doing the work, not just greenwashing and saying that they do the work, saying that they care, but having measurable and tangible goals that they're actively working towards. So I would say it's worth it, but it depends on what your goals are as an individual. Where do you want your career to go? Where do you see yourself? And sometimes you just have to kind of like go through it to then find out. I only came to this realization after getting into luxury, but I wouldn't say that's the end all be all. If you can't get into luxury, get into like the more contemporary fashion brands and maybe the more premium fashion brands and understand your why. Why do you love fashion so much? What is it about fashion that you love so much? And then maybe try to get into it from a different angle. Sometimes it could be streetwear, for example, that you're mostly passionate about, and there's so many streetwear brands and they make so much money. So actually, in terms of earning potential, you might be better off joining one of those streetwear brands as opposed to the big luxury names that kind of just see you as replaceable, because they know that they have more leverage than you. Whereas if you have a bigger role in a smaller company, they know that replacing you is a lot harder because you know all of their systems and you help them actually build something. Mm-hmm. So I would be strategic if I was to kind of like start all over again and really think deeply about what your goals are and whether your next move is kind of beneficial towards your wider goal.
To that point, I would also say it's like I completely get it. So I'm not being dismissive about the industry, but I do get that it has to be a mindset shift, because honestly, it's, you know, when you're sometimes in this room, it's who do you work for? And if it's like Gucci, it's like, oh yes, they did such and such. And it's like, you know, if you're like,
who do you work somebody
for? You're somebody. Yeah. So it's like, honestly, I understand in terms of how the fashion industry works, it is very much who you work for. A lot of these heritage and legacy brands are, you know, at the top. But like I said, it's like a lot of the brands brands who are coming up now have just as much cachet basically as these heritage brands. But I do understand in terms of like being sold a dream that it is always like you have to be at those top brands. But again, thinking about those top brands, you might start on maybe £13,000-£14,000, you know, it's like you're not necessarily going to get paid the money that you need to get paid. Whereas if you went to a small brand, like you were saying, those brands who, you know, like A Fear of God, for example, those brands are the ones who are making a lot of money. So when you come in, you could be coming in at £20,000-£21,000. So if you see a brand and they're on Matches or they're on Net-a-Porter, you need to know that they are actually just as viable as a luxury brand. But I think, you know, as an industry as a whole, we all need to have that mindset shift, because even to your point about being a big fish in a small pond, working as like a fashion editor, like I work for The Impression, and they have an amazing kind of readership across sort of Europe and across Asia. They're a US-based publication, and they're extremely well read by executives within the fashion industry. And because I'm their kind of European correspondent here, I get to go to Fashion Week and I get to sit front row. And it's like, if I was working at other sort of legacy publications, I'm probably a team of 10. So it's like, I might only get to go to London Fashion Week and that might be it, but I get to go to Milan, I get to go to Paris, and that is because I'm the only European correspondent, you know, in my major magazines. It makes sense to be strategic about where you're placing yourself. So I completely agree.
Fantastic. That's really, really valuable and very transparent advice. So at LCF Graduate Futures, we offer several opportunities for our students and graduates to gain help in entering the fashion jobs market. So we do individual careers consultations, we do webinars, and we help with CV preparation, portfolio reviews. I would love to hear your advice on, once you've got your CV, your cover letter, portfolio, and you're looking good on paper, how do you stand out in an interview? Angela, like, what are your top tips?
I would take it back a bit and say, I think there are so many resources that are available to students and graduates now in terms of getting your voice out there. I've seen so many people who I've followed on Instagram, followed on TikTok, who have got positions at major publications, at major brands, because they started their, you know, their channel, they had an opinion about something, where whether they were a fashion critic or they, you know, put out mood boards or they did trend reports. But I think in terms of having a voice already, that will really make you stand out in an interview. But I think in an interview, honestly, you have to do your research in terms of whatever brand you're going to work for. Have a look at, you know, where were their latest, you know, store openings? Was it somewhere, you know, really interesting, like an emerging market, for example? What are their sustainability plans for the coming year? Are they doing something? Are they designing a kit for, you know, the Olympics team that's, you know, that's coming up this year for their country? I think when you can go in and, you know, just say, oh, well, you know, I saw that you guys were doing, you know, for example, a food pop-up for the holidays. That was really interesting. And I love the way that you kind of connected with a time which is about family, and you weren't trying to sell anything, but you were basically, it was branded, but you were selling food. So people kind of knew about your brand, but you weren't doing the hard sell. And I thought that was a really great kind of marketing trick. And if I'm the interviewer, I might be like, okay, this person has paid attention. They actually understood what we were doing as a brand, and they actually appreciated the fact that we weren't doing the hard sell. So I think whenever it comes to interviews, doing your research, but also trying to find those interesting little nuggets of information that you could kind of impart. And I think just being aware of what is actually happening in the industry. So obviously, you know, people are talking about, you know, luxury and how it's going to be changing this year in terms of seeing a bit of a downturn. But since 2020, things have changed. And I think we need to think about solutions. You need to be solutions driven, because with the cost of living, financial uncertainty, all the chaos that's happening with the different conflicts in the world, we now need to think about how fashion can be solutions based and solutions driven. So whether that's the case of you going for an interview and you need to be, you know, if someone says, you know, what are some key things that you think are important for a brand? I think, you know, obviously authenticity is really important. Being true to yourself as a brand is being really important. Speaking to your community is also really important. And just having a kind of unique point of view, not kind of going, you know, with every trend, but having a unique point of view as a brand is also going to be really key. And I think, you know, you as an interviewee, you need to have your own opinions. You know, you need to have your own opinions about what is happening in the world and how as a brand they can maybe improve. And again, just have a look at that brand and think about ways that things that maybe they're not doing that you think, oh, actually, I've seen that you know, maybe you guys aren't on TikTok. Have you thought about doing, you know, a channel? Or, oh, actually, you guys aren't on TikTok. So I actually did like a little test TikTok for you. I did, you know, I actually put one together for you as a brand. and what do you think, and you can show them. So think about things outside of the box which you can kind of bring to an interview. That's always super interesting, because obviously everyone always asks the where are you from and what do you do and what do you study, but if you can kind of speak to them about their brand in a new and exciting way, I think that will make you much more memorable.
Fantastic. And how about you, Giovanna? Like, how, say for example with Selfridges, how did you approach the interview?
So my initial interview was as a sales associate. So I was kind of in the company before then going into a brand specialist role. So the interview wasn't as kind of intense as maybe if I was external to the company. But I would say when you are external to the company and kind of like approaching it firsthand, I call it finding the sweet spot. So it's kind of like knowing what you would bring to a role that they currently lack and that they need. So that relies on what Angela touched on, doing your research and really kind of like understanding the brand or understanding maybe the role itself and what they could potentially need or why they're hiring. And these are things that you can ask. So the interview goes both ways. The reason why I call it finding the sweet spot is really kind of like ensuring that you come across as professional but also personable enough, and then making sure that you show them what you can bring into the role but also trying to mirror the person that you think that they want to hire for the role without it kind of like losing authenticity, I would say. So be yourself but still remember that it is a professional environment and it is a role. I know that we talk a lot about networking, but people don't always hire their friends or people that they like. Ultimately, it will come down to who can make that person look good. If they're going to be your director or if they're going to be your senior manager, can you help them in kind of like reaching their department goals? Can you bring those skills? Can you add something to the role? And are you willing to learn? And also ask questions throughout the interview process to understand if the role is aligned to what you want and what you can do, or if it's a role that can help you to grow as well. Because sometimes you're really wanting to get your foot through the door and you're almost kind of like too eager, but it's kind of like you forget that you have so much about you that's so unique that could add to this role. You can bring in your own opinion, and actually letting them know what your opinion is and making suggestions from there, so they know that they're adding value into the company. Because it's both ways. They'll be training you and you'll be taking away from it, but what can you add to it? What is it about your unique experience, your educational background, whatever work experience you've already done that can then add to it? So I call it finding the sweet spot, because it's just thinking about what you can bring, what you can get from it, balancing those two sides of things.
Fantastic. I think that's really valuable insight. I think the research tip from you, Angela, is just super important. And then knowing your value, as you mentioned, Giovanna, is perfect. So coming up to our last question, both of you have mentioned you have what we would call a portfolio career, meaning that you've worked a combination of full-time roles for employers, and then you've also founded your own freelancing practices or businesses. I'm curious to know how you initiated these practices. Like, how did you make that leap and transition from the standard 9-to-5? So Giovanna, I'd love to hear more about the fashion blueprint and how it came to fruition.
Yeah, my journey was quite interesting. So I was still in full-time employment when I started the fashion blueprint, and initially it started because I wanted a role in consultancy. I was actually going to apply for WGSN, but then they told me that the role had been put on hold, and this was late 2019, so just before COVID. So I had no idea what was going to happen the following year whatsoever. And then at around that same time, I then met with my co-founder Missy, who I had met at university and who I hadn't really been speaking to much, but we both were aware of what each other were doing. You know, we kind of had stayed in touch to an extent, and then we kind of came together and we started talking about how we think there's a lack of community in the fashion industry and how everyone just kind of like goes out into the wilderness and tries to find their feet and establish themselves. I think now in 2024 it's much more common to find networking events and communities that you can kind of like join, or even graduate futures. I don't think this existed when I was at university at all, and it's exactly what I would have loved if I was at university, because it kind of gives you a bridge between your experience in education to then going into the world of employment. And because that didn't exist, we were like, okay, we could start this agency. We'll call it the Fashion Blueprint, and it will kind of like support people who are maybe wanting to start their fashion brands, whether they have a maybe already a background in fashion or not, we can be kind of like their go-to. And we don't want people to kind of like continue getting into fashion and feeling alone, because a lot of designers experience loneliness and depression because it's a lot of pressure to want to establish yourself, or even not just designers, like anyone, junior people going into the industry and not really having anyone to speak to. Because for example, in my experience, no one in my family has ever worked in fashion. Everyone comes from a very kind of like academic background, so I was kind of like the first person to go down a more creative route. So I didn't really have anyone that was my blueprint. You know, if I wanted to be a lawyer, I would know exactly who to speak to in my family or within my immediate group of friends or their families. But when it came to fashion, it was kind of just every man for themselves. So that's how we started the Fashion Blueprint in 2019. We really wanted to create a community where people could come together, and then we would provide them with consultancy services. And COVID hit, so we couldn't do any events throughout that year, for about a year and a half, I'd say. So we started to offer like online services, like online consultations, business coaching, and we started joining. There was an app called Clubhouse that everyone joined during the pandemic, and it was really good to kind of like get things going. So the concept of community then was starting to become more of a thing, even though it was in a digital sense, and initially we thought it would take more of a physical sense. So that's how it started. But then over time it evolved into more of a consulting agency, and now we have TFB Studios, which is our manufacturing arm. So it's kind of like a one-stop shop for people wanting to start or develop their fashion brands independently, mostly. So we work with mostly literally independent fashion brands, because it is hard to establish the structure of your business when you're kind of just doing everything by yourself with a really small team. So that's been our journey. And my transition into full-time freelance consultancy actually only happened last year. So at Rotaro, because I was head of marketing, I had a big role. It was becoming really difficult to manage both at the same time, because it was the responsibilities of my 9-to-5, and then we were starting to get more clients coming through the door at the Fashion Blueprint, and our community was growing. I then moved on from Rotaro at a time where we had enough demand from the Fashion Blueprint, and since then I've just been full-time freelance working for the Fashion Blueprint, as well as freelance just kind of like off my own back and off my own contacts. So that's been my journey. It was scary. I would say it was really scary because I don't have as much security. It's really nice to know exactly how much you're going to get paid each month, but also I think it's weighing out the pros and cons. So yes, you had maybe security and you had kind of like a more predictable career path, but I didn't feel like it was all of me in a role. And in fashion, you work so hard and you work for such long hours. I just felt like the best years of my life were kind of like slipping away, and I just really wanted to take that risk before I was too scared to do it, because it's scary. But I think once you start to have really big responsibilities in life, it becomes harder. Or once you get too used to a role or a company, then it becomes even harder. So I was just like, I'm gonna do it, and if I fail, then I fail. It's fine. I tried. There's no such thing as failure, because I did it, and I'll be proud of myself always for doing it. But so far so good. So far so good, and I'm loving it. I'm so happy that I took that leap just into consultancy freelance. So yeah, that's been my journey.
Incredible. Super, super inspiring. The key word I took from that is it is a big risk, and taking that leap
most definitely
has to be really calculated. How about you, Angela? How did you kind of navigate moving into freelancing?
Initially, let me just say that it can be very scary, but what I've learned being like freelance is that you can have a part-time job if you want to.
True.
I've got friends who've got their own businesses and they work 3 or 4 days doing a part-time role, which gives them a secure salary at the end of every month, and then they spend the rest of their time. So it's easier than doing your 9-to-5 and then what is it, your 5 to 1 a.m. exactly, on your own business. Whereas actually it might be easier to actually split it up into 3 days a week where you're doing your part-time job. And again, it could be something in, you know, admin, which is completely unrelated. So literally when you shut the laptop on your third day, that part of your job is done. And then, you know, you've got 4 days of the week to spend on your freelancing and the things you really love. So absolutely, sometimes it can be scary, but there is always the option of taking a job to help. But in terms of my journey throughout my career, I think since, you know, I kind of got into trend forecasting when I was working at sort of both Tesco and Debenhams, I did kind of discover LinkedIn. It just opened up this whole new world for me, and I was always posting whenever it came to fashion week. That was my thing. Whenever it came to fashion week, I would always study all the runways, and then I would put up trends on LinkedIn, and I got like a really good, probably got 2,000 plus people who follow me on LinkedIn, because I was always putting up these fashion trends, or if anything ever happened news wise I'd always put it up and say, oh hey, this happened, you know, in the news recently, I wonder how it's going to affect the fashion industry in the future, or I wonder how, you know, the luxury industry is going to change because of this piece of legislation has now come in. Or for example, we're seeing, you know, if there's like quiet luxury or whatever it is, you know, is quiet luxury just a case of people wanting to simplify their lives and wanting to just go back to their own wardrobes and seeing, you know, what they have there that they can kind of reuse. So I would always have an opinion about things, and that kind of gave me a voice on LinkedIn. So I was always kind of building up my brand, my personal brand, and I actually started to have people come to me to do panel talks. My first panel talk was for Edited, and it was really exciting, because then it was like the director of Vogue Business actually asked me, you know, reached out and said, would you be able to be in this panel talk? And I was like, okay, yeah, exactly. I was like, me? Okay. So yeah, so you know, I was on that panel talk, and at the time I was in full-time work, you know, at Debenhams. I let, you know, my boss know, because I wanted to be transparent. I let my boss know. My boss was more than happy for me to do it, and you know, from there, as soon as I put that up on LinkedIn, literally the sky was the limit. So many kind of different things came in. But again, when you work in full-time, there's a little bit of restriction in terms of sometimes what you can do. You always have to read your contract, because sometimes whether something is paid or whether it's free, you know, whether you're doing something free, you might not be able to do it because it might be a conflict. So I think because so many things were coming in, I already started to think, this could be a, you know, an avenue for me to actually explore. Then the pandemic hit, COVID, and from working at Debenhams, I think obviously the market is very, very volatile, and at that time Debenhams was struggling, so it wasn't necessarily a surprise, you know, I was made redundant. And I had actually, again, it's like, that's why I'm in forecasting, because I had the foresight to see that I better start saving my money, being really, you know, sensible with my salary, because things in the market seem to, you know, be a bit volatile. So even when the redundancy came around, myself and a couple of colleagues were like, well, we're okay, because we kind of at least were, you know, had the foresight enough to think things might not go so well for your company. So we were sort of okay in that respect. Being made redundant, it actually opened up more opportunities for me, because it made me think, what do I want to do? And I think I was like, I love my forecasting, you know, role. I love to kind of write. And during the actual pandemic, in the first maybe 1 or 2 months, I thought to myself, you had so many fashion brands who were like, yeah, we need to slow down, this should be a pivotal moment for us. And I thought, yeah, actually it should. So I don't know why, that must be crazy, but I think at the time I actually decided to write like a 60-page manifesto, still on my LinkedIn, about how the fashion industry could navigate through COVID-19. And it was going to be in 4 parts, and I think I only got through the first part. And 60 pages, I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this again. So I think, and again, it got maybe like 2,000-3,000 people that liked it or something like that, but that actually got me the role that I'm in now, because my editor-in-chief, his wife saw it and recommended me for, you know, to speak to him. And then we had a conversation. He was like, would you like to come and work, you know, for The Impression? And I'd never done, you know, been a fashion editor before, but I knew I could write. And that's kind of how it started. So, you know, working as a fashion editor, and then also using my skills as a fashion forecaster to work with a number of different brands, doing brand consultancy. And that's kind of what I do now. So that's how I've been able to, it naturally kind of happened, but it was already happening in the background while I was at work, and I was just able to kind of build on it after 2020.
Can I just say, I love the way you looked at your redundancy. It was an opportunity for you now to explore and maybe spread your wings and yes, see what else you could do. And sometimes we're so afraid to start from scratch, but now you have no excuse because you have yes, that other option, and it opened up so many doors for you. And I think maybe some of that energy while you were inspired then maybe could have led to you writing that manifesto. But then it's beautiful because it's all of your years of experience, yes, and then this kind of like situation you find yourself in turns you into this editor that yeah, you've now become. But it's maybe you would not pursue that if you hadn't yes, then moved on from Debenhams, you know. So mm-hmm, I think I see the beauty in that, and I love absolutely, how you kind of like approached it, because redundancy is so common now, especially mm-hmm, after COVID. Fashion is not a necessity. We all wear clothes, but fashion is not a necessity. No. So right now where people are struggling to heat their homes and afford groceries, fashion is not so much of a priority, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people in the industry have become redundant. A lot of small businesses have gone bankrupt. Even the bigger businesses, the high street, is non-existent anymore. Yes. Mm-hmm. Apart from like the big international retailers, the high street doesn't exist anymore. It's really good to think of it as a way to pursue other things and really reinvent yourself. So I think there's beauty in that, and I see it.
Absolutely. What a great way to sort of round off and close our conversation. I could pick both your brains all day. So thank you so much, Angela and Giovanna, for your time, your honesty, your insights. I'm sure the listeners will find it super valuable. So please be sure to check out their profiles in the show notes, and also keep up to date with LCF Graduate Futures on our Moodle page. Thank you both.
Thank you.